This is FSN.
Thanks very much, Ollie Barrett. Welcome to Thursday's programme. Hope you've had a good old day. Live right now on Fab Radio 2, tune in at Radio TriggerWarning.tv and RichieAllen.co.uk. It is the 17th of January 2019. It's been a pretty cold day today. Winter is here, I suppose.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
And as usual, there's lots to talk about. If you'd like to talk to me, you can do so through Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show. Alrighty, talk to me on Twitter right now.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, because I do like reading your tweets. I will very soon open the phone lines. Not today, but I will in the very, very near future do an extended phone-in. One or two of you asking me, not today especially, but recently asking me to do a phone-in again and open it up. I'll give plenty of notice and we'll get a wide variety of calls from around the world. I will do that. Today, though, it's me and you. I'm with you till 6, a shorter show today, till the top of the hour. Just us. Just the two of us. I'm away this evening. Forgot all about it. Never put anything in the planner. But it's you and I for an hour. Packed programme. Working on it all day. Got a roundup of the news for you right now. And I've already said, your comments appreciated through Twitter. Richie Allen Show for Thursday. Let's crack on with it then. A little bit of Brexit, which seems to have annoyed at least one listener. Brexit, as opposed to Brexit. Brexit. Doesn't matter, does it? Brilliant story in the Telegraph newspaper today. In fact, it was their front page this morning. And what I find interesting about this is it's a wonderful way, this particular story, for me to demonstrate to newer listeners, those who have joined the programme recently, the perplexed people just beginning to scratch the surface of the alternative media. And what the Telegraph published this morning, wonderful illustration of what's really happening in the world, compounded by the fact that the broadcast media largely chose to ignore the lead story in the Telegraph today. The Telegraph even is, of course, a broadsheet newspaper published here in the UK. And they ran with today, exclusive, Philip Hammond tells business chiefs MPs will stop no deal Brexit. Exclusive, Philip Hammond tells business chiefs MPs will stop no deal Brexit. Now, Philip Hammond is the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He's got the second most important job in the government. He's the number two, really. Then you have the Home Secretary, of course. He's the man in control or in charge of the purse strings. Now, of course, he isn't really, but you're supposed to believe that he is. The Telegraph reported today that Philip Hammond told business leaders that the threat of a no-deal Brexit could be taken off the table within days and potentially lead to Article 50 being rescinded. So how does the Telegraph know this? Well, the Telegraph, in a decent bit of journalism, managed to get hold of a leaked conference call. They got a recording of a conference call. Tell you about the conference call. So Hammond set out how a backbench bill could effectively be used to stop any prospect of a no deal. He suggested that ministers may even back the plan when asked for an assurance by the head of Tesco that the government would not oppose the motion. So there are plenty of people on this conference call with Philip Hammond. The head of Tesco, I think currently the UK's most successful supermarket chain, I think, in terms of revenue, right? So Tesco was on the call. I'll tell you who else was on the call in a minute. So Hammond said next week's bill, which could force the government to extend Article 50, was likely to win support and act as the ultimate backstop against a no-deal Brexit, as a large majority in the Commons is opposed to no deal under any circumstances. So the Telegraph was given a recording of this call, and the call recounts how the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, Greg Clark, the Business Secretary, and Stephen Barclay, the Brexit Secretary, spent nearly an hour talking to the leaders of 330 leading firms. So you've got Hammond on the call, Greg Clark and Stephen Barclay, and you've got 330 heads of some of the biggest companies, not only in the UK, but in the world. Because on the call were the heads of Amazon, Scottish Power, Siemens, Tesco, and BP, and I could be here all day long. The disclosure reveals the close nature. This is the Telegraph now, it's their article, and this is the Telegraph text. The disclosure reveals the close nature of the relationship between the Treasury and some of Britain's biggest businesses, and how they appear to be working in tandem to block a hard Brexit. It will also add to suspicions, writes the Telegraph, that Philip Hammond has been orchestrating attempts to soften Brexit. Yeah. I'm going to channel my inner Randy Macho Man Savage here. Yeah. And Mean Gene, rest in peace. It's hard not to get annoyed reading this. Why are you getting annoyed? I'm getting annoyed because none of the main broadcast news channels today picked up on this story. What you had on the conference call was a mini fucking Bilderberg group meeting. That's what you had. You had three of the most senior ministers in the government taking instructions from massive global corporations. Brexit must never happen. Under any circumstances. No deal Brexit must never happen under any circumstances. Hammond was getting his orders in a telephone call with 330 of the biggest companies in the world. And the entire text of that conference call is available on the Telegraph website today. And it is startling. To you? No. Definitely not. To me? No. But to the millions and millions of people in this country who think they live in a democracy. They work for us. No, they fucking don't. Never have they worked for you. None of them. Not the bearded Muppet with the elbow patches. Not Theresa May and her bent husband. Or Johnson. Or David Cameron. None of them have ever worked for you. These are who they work for. Massive international corporations. Wonderful stuff by the Telegraph. Laid out bare for you. The people went to the polls in 2016. Said we've had enough of the tyranny of the European Union. The biggest companies in the world and their hand-picked puppets at Westminster said, well, we'll just see about that, won't we? This conference call took place at 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday, 2 hours after Theresa May's bill was defeated in the Commons. It went on for nearly an hour. Hammond was summoned by his masters in business to appease them and to tell them, don't worry about it. It's all going to be okay. Excellent stuff by the Telegraph. And while that's going on, while traitors like Philip Hammond, who should be locked up in the Tower of London, is doing that, they're scaring the shit out of the people morning, noon and night in this country with horror stories about what will happen, Armageddon type stories, biblical stuff about what will happen if we leave with no deal. In the Daily Mail today, it was reported that army reservists have been called up in preparation for a no-deal Brexit. Troops will be on standby on the streets from next month in case of civil unrest. Fear. Ministry of Defence has admitted this. It's called up part-time soldiers. Reservists will be 10% of the 3,500 no-deal deployment. That's what it's been dubbed, the no-deal deployment. Soldiers could be used in a range of roles in the event of a no-deal. Orders will be to guard against threat to welfare of citizens and the economy. The army on the streets, engaging in police work. What could possibly go wrong? Some world you're living in, eh? So as all this was going on today, party leaders and senior MPs have been meeting Theresa May to try and find a compromise on Brexit after her withdrawal deal was rejected by MPs. Labour's Jeremy Corbyn, the elbow patch wearing man himself, said the talks were a stunt and that he would not take part unless a no-deal Brexit is in fact ruled out. Here's Jezza.
I'm quite happy to talk, but the starting point for any talks about Brexit must be that the threat of a disastrous no-deal outcome is ruled out, taken off the table, and we can talk about the future of the plans that we will put forward and the future relationship with Europe. But take no deal off the table now, please, Prime Minister. With no deal on the table, the Prime Minister would enter into phony talks just to run down the clock and try to blackmail MPs to vote through her botched deal on a second attempt by threatening the country with the chaos that no deal would bring if they resist her entreaties to support her deal a second time.
Yeah, that's the pot calling the kettle black there, Jeremy. Senior politicians on all sides have been meeting with cabinet ministers. May will publish a new plan next Monday with a full debate and vote scheduled for next Tuesday. Or is that a week on Tuesday? Yes, it'll be a week on Tuesday. So there'll be a new plan on Monday, and then Tuesday week there will be a vote scheduled on that plan. It's a complete stitch-up now. It's all over, bar the shouting. Here's Sky News reporter Dominic Waghorn, and he's talking about extending Article 50 and delaying Brexit. Now, Dominic Waghorn is in Brussels. He's there, and he's in contact regularly with the major players in the EU. Juncker, Tusk, of course, Verhofstadt and all the rest, Barnier. So listen to Sky reporter Dominic Waghorn from Brussels talking about how the EU planning to extend Article 50 and delay Brexit, which means that the March 29th deadline is now meaningless because we're supposed to be leaving on March 29th. Dominic Waghorn.
Now, they are recognising here, I think, Kay, that whatever's going on in London is probably going to need more time. So up until this point, they have been saying that Article 50 couldn't be extended beyond March unless there was the possibility of a general election or a referendum in the UK. They're now looking like they're moving more on that. The French and the Germans sort of accepting there will be a need for more time. I think there's less agreement about quite how long. There was some reporting yesterday that EU officials were preparing for the possibility of extending Article 50 into next year, if anybody could bear the idea of this going on for another 12 months. I asked the Commission spokesperson about that today. He wouldn't be drawn on those reports. He simply said when they are asked for an extension, they will consider it. But the French and the Germans have been saying publicly it could be extended. So however long it takes in Westminster, there is a recognition now that London is going to get some more time, that deadline in March isn't necessarily a hard and fast deadline. If Theresa May wants more time, of course, she may want to run the clock out. She says she doesn't. But if she does and doesn't ask for an extension, then by default, the UK does fall out of the European Union at the end of March.
Of course, Theresa May is not going to run the clock down till March 29th. May's a Remainer. And even if she had any intention of doing that, we've already heard from the Telegraph, brilliant Telegraph article today. We saw the Yvette Cooper, Nicky Morgan amendment, which was passed, that makes it impossible anyway. The Parliament will not allow the UK leave with no deal. It's a stitch-up. And I've tried to explain this. The only way to leave the European Union is without a deal. To do any sort of deal whatsoever is not to leave, you see? That's a fact. Let me read a few tweets. There's plenty of them coming in. Andy Newman tweets, we have to tell the EU we are preparing to leave without a deal in order to get them to negotiate seriously. Andy, I know it sounds very simplistic. What you do is you leave, full stop. And then you say as you are leaving, thanks, it was nice to know you. We don't plan on slapping any import duties or any harsh tariffs on EU goods coming into the UK. We know you are not going to be stupid enough to do the same. Live and let live, because you sell more to us than we sell to you. That's all that needed to be done. But this is an establishment. This is a regime. It's far beyond the scope of most people's understanding. Forget the country. The government and the politicians of the government and the opposition party do not want to leave the European Union. If they did, this would have ended about 6 weeks after the vote back in 2016. It would have all been over. We're off, lads. Thanks very much. Obviously, we're very close to you geographically, so we look after one another, won't we? But listen, from now on in, our own courts will make decisions. Our own legislature will draft legislation on all manner of things. We'll do all our own sort of stuff like that, because after all, we're a sovereign country. You do what you want, we'll do what we want. There won't be any punitive measures applied to goods. Isn't that right, Mr. Juncker? It would have been over in weeks if this country's government and opposition were serious about enacting the will of the people as expressed by the vote. That's what we have to get our heads around. Patrick says that Philip Hammond, he's comparing Philip Hammond to Michael Howard. Talk about Michael Howard having something of the night about him, Richie. It could be that Philip Hammond has wrested the mantle from him. That was a famous statement by Anne Widdecombe, of course, occasional guest on this programme, when she said there's something of the night about Michael Howard when he won the leadership of the Conservative Party. David tweets, I can see it coming, chicken nugget tax and fart tax, all reported back to the Empire by your friendly neighbourhood, Alexis of Evil. David, are you talking about stories in the press today that talked about reducing our consumption of meat to save the planet? Because if I have time, I will get into that a little bit later on. Hi to Mike Houston. How you doing, Mike? Interesting comment from Faisal on the army deployment. Faisal says the army will be on the streets to cope with the civil unrest when it becomes clear that Brexit referendum has been reversed. Trust the media. Turn it around. That's very possible. Les Hewitt said the whole Brexit thing is very depressing. It is, Les. But you know, it's the Emperor revealed, isn't it? What is happening? Hi to Gary. How you doing, Gary? Hi to Coca Bell. How you doing, Coca Bell? Nice to know you're listening live to the show this afternoon. 21 minutes past the hour. Even RT. And we like RT, don't we? We find some interesting things on RT. Even RT is beginning to put more and more remainers on. That's RT UK, I should say. Not only that, but giving them an easy ride. Have a listen to Jason Hunter. Jason is an international trade negotiator, and he was interviewed on RT, was Jason, and he's very pompous and very arrogant in saying that Brexit will never happen, and I think he gets a very easy ride. International trade negotiator Jason Hunter.
Donald Tusk, the president of the European Council, he specifically said, who has got the courage? Because a deal is impossible, clearly, as we saw last night with a massive vote against the government. No deal is too catastrophic for the United Kingdom. The only third option that we've got available in the time available is to rescind Article 50.
In other words, stop Brexit, which is against what the public voted for, Jason. How can you possibly say that when even Theresa May wanted to remain? She's been pushing on behalf of what the nation once.
She's been saying that for a while. A lot of other politicians on various sides have been saying, yes, we have to respect the results of the referendum. And I say BS. That's just not true. We do not have to respect the results of the referendum because 17.4 million people did not vote for Theresa May's deal, which is half in and half out. Some of them may have done. 17.4 million people did not vote for a hard no-deal cliff-edge Brexit.
Well, Boris Johnson would argue. He said, actually, when people voted, they were going for that no-deal option.
Some of them were, but not 17.4 million people. 16.8 million people voted to remain in the European Union, and that is the majority.
What the fuck did Jason say there?
16.8 million people voted to remain in the European Union, and that is the majority.
What? What kind of fuckery are you? Jason, go back to your mother and father and play that clip to them so that they can go to the private school they paid £10,000 a term to put you in to get their fucking money back. 16.8 million is not a majority over 17.4, you daft bastard. Jesus Christ. This is the mind control. It's Stockholm Syndrome of sorts, isn't it? You actually, you tell people often enough that Manchester United wear white jerseys when they play at home. They don't, they wear red. But if you tell people often enough, New Zealand rugby team plays in pink shirts. If you tell people often enough, they'll come to believe it. You can even tell them that 48 is a greater number than 52. Last bit of Brexit news for this week, of course. I know you're glad to hear that. Had a bit of a giggle this morning. Labour's Barry Gardner, the Shadow International Development Secretary, was on Sky with the normally demure and acquiescent Sarah Jane Mee. Sarah was asking Barry Gardner, why won't Jeremy meet with Theresa May? Good for a laugh. Barry Gardner from Labour, Shadow International Development Secretary with Sky's Sarah Jane Mee. It all got a bit silly.
Why wouldn't Jeremy Corbyn accept the Prime Minister's invitation? It's still there. She said her door's open. Just getting a flavour of what viewers think of his decision this morning. We've had words like rude, childish and playground politics. Why didn't he go to those cross-party talks?
No, look, let me be clear. We welcome the fact that the government is now, after 2 years of refusing not just to engage with the opposition, but actually refusing to engage with Parliament, we welcome the fact that she now wants to reach out and to talk to people across the House. But in doing that, she has to show that actually she's flexible, that she actually wants to listen to what we have to say and will be prepared to take some of those things on board.
Well, how will you find that out if you don't go and talk to her face to face?
That's why what we've said, precisely the way of finding out, is to say, look, let's do what everyone from your own Chancellor, right the way through to the ferry boat operators, to the farmers, to the CBI, to the trade union movement, everybody is saying no deal would be a complete disaster for this country. Let's take that off the table because so far in the negotiations, what she's done is she's used no deal as a way.
She's very poor here, Sarah Jane Mee. He's repeated several times that everybody agrees that no deal would be a disaster. Of course, that isn't true at all. Former Bank of England governors have been saying that no deal is a good thing. A number of senior academics have said no deal is a good thing. Some trade unionists have said that no deal is a good thing. She should interrupt him and say, you can't say that. It isn't true that everybody agrees that no deal is bad. Anyway, it gets funny.
As a way of holding a gun to Parliament.
Remember, she asked him, why doesn't your leader just go and sit across the table from Theresa May?
Parliament's head in order to try and get Parliament to vote for her bad deal.
Well, now, Parliament wasn't on TV fooled this morning by that. Saying this? Why isn't Jeremy Corbyn
I'm trying to answer the question.
Jeremy Corbyn, why didn't he go face to face with the Prime Minister to say all of this? Jeremy Corbyn's not on the television this morning saying what you're saying. He should go to the Prime Minister. She's the Prime Minister of this country and say this to her face. What's he got to lose by doing that?
No. Look, sorry, that just really is rather puerile. We've been saying,
is it showing the Prime Minister the courtesy of accepting her invitation to discuss the biggest political issue
to spend the interview telling me what you think, then please continue. I'm all ears.
Please answer the question.
I'm trying to, but every time I do, you interrupt me. Now, okay, if you want to restate the question, I will happily answer it.
Okay.
So what is the question? When you talk over me, I can't hear you.
She's rattled. She's actually good, Sarah. She started off doing soccer for Sky Sports and migrated from soccer into news presentation. She's actually good. And I'm not trying to score any points by saying she's good. She just needs to toughen up. I'd have annihilated him. Answer the fucking question, you bearded twat, I would have said, and then I would have been fired. But you would have laughed forever and a day.
Hear you.
The question was, why wouldn't Jeremy Corbyn show the Prime Minister of this country the courtesy of going to tell her all of this that you're telling me and the viewers at home face to face? What's he got to lose?
Look, Jeremy Corbyn face to face across the dispatch box yesterday said...
Yeah, and he just waffles on. I thought it was a bit of a giggle. Rich tweets, Labour are all fucked up. They won't talk. They won't tell the public what they would do themselves. They are just on the fence, completely non-committal, hedging their bets. Hi to Base Ninja. On the conference call with Philip Hammond and the 330 businesses, the conference call shows in all its glory how fascist the UK actually is. Combine it with Her Majesty's army on the streets. We're screwed, says Base Ninja there. Cheers, mate. Faisal saying Corbyn has finally showed his anti-democratic colours. Yeah, I've kind of been saying that for since forever. Hi to Mawinga, who says, what type of divorce tactic is this? It's like no one in government has ever been divorced before. Yes. In This Together tweets, I wonder how long it will take the army to realise they are being asked to harm the people they swore to protect. They'll follow orders, mate, is what they'll do. They will follow orders. What they were told to do or what they will be told to do is what they'll do. You know, look at some of the things they got up to in Iraq. Look at some of the things they got up to in Afghanistan and in Libya and everywhere else that we've been. I don't think they'll have any moral compunctions about policing, arresting, detaining people in their own country. Shall we have some music? Little bit of music, what you think? We're going to have a pause then. It's 5:30, 5:30. This is the Sultans of Ping. And this is a good song, and I bet you've never heard it before, right? Right. Introducing you to something new. Back in a minute with more.
Out in the ocean at the bottom of...
The Sultans of Ping FC and a song called Turnip Fish on the Richie Allen Show. Sultans of Ping FC, originally from Cork City. And that's a fairly old tune. I think that came out in around 91 or 92. They were kind of an Irish punk band that had quite a bit of success in the very early 90s. Played a lot of festivals in the UK. And I suppose their most famous song was a song called Where's Me Jumper? Yes, indeed. Where's Me Jumper? Not going to win any Ivor Novello Awards, but... Good stuff. Now, here's a disturbing story. Before we get into that, a few more tweets. A massive shout out to Natalie Stacey. How you do, Natalie? Which reminds me, trigger warning, with Hayden Hewitt and Graham Booth will be live this evening at 10 p.m. on YouTube and on triggerwarning.tv. It might also be on liveleak.com. That's the Trigger Warning Show, which is a madcap, zany show, occasionally very pithy, very wry, sharp observations of the news by Hayden Hewitt and Graham Booth, and a load of dicking around, it must be said, but all very funny and very entertaining. So that's the Trigger Warning Show, live at 10 p.m. this evening, Thursday, that's UK time, on YouTube and on triggerwarning.tv. Right. Base Ninja points out very well that the army oath is not to protect the people. It is to protect the crown. Very important point, that. He's absolutely spot on. Stories like the one I'm going to briefly read you in today's Daily Mail don't get any more disturbing. Here's the headline inside the Daily Mail today. Two lazy detectives deliberately sabotaged child abuse investigations by destroying evidence and forging documents due to a cynical disdain for alleged victims. Yeah. I'll read you the story. Two police officers, the first paragraph of the story is the headline again. Two officers sabotaged a string of child sex abuse investigations out of a combination of cynical disdain for the accused and laziness, a court has heard. They've named the detectives as Detective Constable Sharon Patterson and former Detective Constable Lee Pollard, who allegedly lied to their supervisors in Essex Police's child abuse investigation team between 2011 and 2014. The officers were in a relationship. They were together. And they deliberately entered false information on crime recording documents in order to misrepresent the evidence or potential evidence in investigations jurors have been hearing. They allegedly forged other documents purporting to be from Crown Prosecution Service lawyers in order to dupe bosses into thinking that a decision had been made to take no further action against suspects. Pollard is further accused of deliberately destroying four important photographs, which were relevant and important exhibits, in an investigation. Whilst Patterson is said to have forged a witness statement and passed it off as having been made by a complainant. During the time of the alleged offences, the unit in which the defendants worked had issues and wasn't performing as it should have, the Old Bailey heard. A number of reviews were carried out into the performance of the unit at the end of 2014 and into 2015, resulting in these charges against the officers. Prosecutor Alexandra Healy, QC, said to the court the allegations represented in these six counts involve forging documents, concealing or destroying evidence, and the misrepresentation of the state of investigations and the evidence involved in the investigations to supervising officers, she said. They were messing around with evidence, destroying evidence, and giving the impression to their supervisors that investigations should be shut down. And they're on trial for it. You know what pisses me off? The paper claims that the prosecutors seem to think that the motivation of the couple was a combination of laziness, self-preservation, and sometimes a cynical disdain for complainants in those child abuse investigations. Gonna pause for you to think about that one. Sabotaging child abuse investigations, destroying evidence, burning photographs and forging documents. Yeah. And we're told that they did that just for the fuck of it. Just for the fuck of it. Because we are lazy and we couldn't give an arse about victims. I don't buy that. I would imagine that pressure, external pressure, maybe from people accused of abusing children, maybe prominent people in the community, put pressure on these officers to fuck around with these child abuse investigations. The Mail says the trial continues. The prosecutors want to put these two cops away. Fair enough. But they want us to believe that they were just a pair of lazy bastards. Lazy fuckers. Yeah. Think we might look a bit further into that one if we can next week. What else do I have to tell you? I mean, can you believe that? If somebody listening to this programme believes that these police officers burned photographs, destroyed evidence and forged documents to derail child abuse investigations, if one of my listeners thinks they did that because they were lazy, will you please tweet me? In fact, tweet me your address and I'll send some men in white coats and women, you misogynistic bastard, I'll send some people around to make sure you're okay. Madness. Horrible story in Ireland. Anti-eviction activist Ben Gilroy jailed for 3 months. If you've listened to this programme long enough, you know Ben Gilroy is top man. Been fighting for years for the rights of people who've had their homes taken from them by fraudulent banksters. Great guy, Ben. Been reported in the Irish media today that Ben was found in contempt of court, by the way, back in 2017, because he was verbally, openly criticising judgments made against ordinary people by the courts. And we live in such a toxic, filthy, totally and utterly fucking corrupt society that he was found in contempt of court for criticising corrupt judicial decisions. So for his contempt of court, they ordered him to complete 80 hours of community service. And he didn't do the service, apparently. Now they want to bang him up for 3 months. Some world we're living in. This guy has done as much as anybody to educate Irish people about the fraudulent mortgage system and how banks and building societies deliberately indebted people up to the gills, never taking any risks themselves, giving them mortgages that were designed to fail so that they could then take ownership of those properties. I've explained this myself a million times. Million times. The privatisation of every house in the country. The bank, of course, took an insurance policy out against every single mortgage, so they're committing double fraud. Gilroy's brilliant. It's been over a year since he was on with me. Sad to hear that today. There you are. Shall we lighten things up a bit? 17 and a half minutes to the top of the... I'm with you till 6. It is the Richie Allen Show for January 17th, 2019. I am indeed Richie Allen. David Webb is a black radio and television presenter. Yesterday, or I should say Tuesday, David was presenting his radio show on Sirius. He's an American. He's a black radio and television presenter. He's an American. He was on Sirius and he was interviewing a CNN legal analyst called Areva Martin. Picture the scene, dear listener. It's a radio program. David Webb is the host. He's black. He's having a robust discussion with a CNN legal analyst called Areva Black. And Areva Black accuses David of having white privilege. Be Jesus. Have a listen to this.
I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
Okay, then I stand.
See, you went to white privilege. This is the falsehood in this. You went immediately with an assumption. Your people, obviously, or you didn't look. You're talking to a black man.
They
who started out in rock radio in Boston, who crossed the paths into hip-hop, rebuilding one of the greatest black stations in America, and went on to work for Fox News, where I'm told apparently blacks aren't supposed to work, but yet you come with this assumption and you go to white privilege.
David,
that's actually
David,
insulting.
It is, and I apologize because my people gave me wrong information. They told
well,
me
the whole white privilege thing is insulting.
David, can I apologize and correct the record? I want to apologize.
She's sorry.
I was given wrong information about you, and I apologize.
But based on my color, you were going to something that I was part of, and just to add to it, my family background is white, black, Indian, Arawak, Irish, Scottish. I mean, it's so diverse. I'm like the UN.
Well, you're more like a mongrel than the UN, David. God love you. If you've got all of those ethnicities in your makeup. I say that in jest, of course, lest somebody accuse me of racism. I liked his answer, David Webb. He then went on to Fox News because he works for Fox News. And he put a bit more context on this accusation of white privilege. David Webb.
But you know, I also went into something, and I want people to understand this. This is a serious conversation to be taken from this. As I've said before, our skin is an organ. It doesn't think, it doesn't formulate ideas. Let's look at it that way and go back to the ideas in our head, the ideas in our mind, and the things we need to discuss.
So here's the thing. Let's look at the whole issue in particular. You had a set of beliefs that she just assumed made you white because you believe what?
Because I was talking about law and process and due process. To be fair, we had a long conversation, probably about 12 minutes or so, going into this portion of my interview with her. And it was a fair exchange of ideas. We were talking about issues where we agree, disagree. We're talking about proof, all things that relate to that. And then we got into the story of media coverage, the CBS coverage team that was tweeted out by AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They're being attacked because of color. And that's how we came around to this. Then I talked about qualifications. I've been through different genres in radio, as you guys know. Rock, urban, hip-hop, you name it. And I've been through different genres in talk. And it was because I did the work, and that's why I made the qualification statement. But being on Patriot Radio with me and being on a conservative talk station, well, I must have been white.
Yeah, white privilege is a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense. It's gotten a hold of academia in the US and in the UK. It's growing roots in educational institutions in this country, and it is an utter nonsense. And saying that white privilege is a nonsense is not compatible with, you know, accusations of, oh, you're ignorant or oblivious to your history and slavery and all of that. It's got nothing to do with any of that. White privilege is a cornerstone of identity politics. Who's the biggest victim? Well, we are. We're the biggest victims. That's what it is. It's a race to the bottom. And the blue ribbon at the end, when you get to the bottom, is claiming for yourself, whether it's blacks, whether it's Asians, whether it's Jews, whether it's Muslims, whether it's whatever. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter what you are or who you are. It's intellectually, I know I've said this a million times, it's intellectually redundant. And it keeps you locked into the mindset of, I don't want to say the mindset of a loser. It's more like the mindset of a victim. I can never be wrong. I can never be responsible for my own success in life. All of the pitfalls, all of my failings and failures can be blamed on another group. That's what it's about. And calling somebody white privilege in an argument is a pathetic attack, focusing really on the person rather than actually trying to engage with what they are saying. And of course, that's the whole point of it. White privilege is a nonsense. I know I've got black listeners. I know they won't like that, but I don't care. I don't care. I am not responsible for racism, which is experienced, of course, by ethnic minorities and by black people occasionally. I'm well aware of it, but I'm not responsible for it. The vast majority of white people are not responsible for it either. And I'm certainly not privileged. As a journalist, I look around the media and I see hundreds and hundreds of black, Asian, ethnic minority presenters everywhere. Do I complain about it and play the victim? Oh, well, I've got no chance. This is cultural Marxism. They're putting all these blacks and Asians. No, I don't do that. I say fair play to them. I don't assume that they were given those jobs because of their gender or because of their ethnicity. I assume that they worked fucking hard for it. I don't see myself as a victim. And I ain't privileged either. I'm going to finish with this, right? This we'll finish on a bit of a giggle. A giggle, but it's also very serious. And it's about film classification. I don't know, you might have seen this today. It's the Richie Allen Show, by the way. How are you, if you've just joined me? I'm going till 6 today, and today only. It's been a packed hour, though, I think. Been at this all day. Some interesting stuff today, I can tell you. 9 minutes at the top of the hour. Film classifications, movie classifications are due to be overhauled. to reflect a media world that has changed beyond all recognition. This news comes, I'm reading from Sky News website, by the way. This news comes following research by the British Board of Film Classification that found people's views of sex and violence have altered since the last survey 5 years ago. A consultation involving 10,000 teenagers and adults found a general tolerance for violent scenes, but young people were particularly troubled by portrayals of discrimination, terrorism, self-harm and suicide. The BBFC found that young people were more disturbed by credible real-life scenarios or seeing a character experience something terrible that the viewer could imagine happening to themselves.
What kind of fuckery is this?
That is plain old fuckery, Amy. Teenagers were saying that they were disturbed by credible real-life scenarios, thinking that, well, that could happen to me. A surprisingly high 95% of teenagers called for stronger film classification. Listen to Anna Smith, president of the Critics Circle film section, speaking with Kay Burley. Anna Smith.
Consulting with the public, they found out that in particular teenagers are very concerned about depictions of sexual violence. And that's something that's very interesting and does seem to have changed over the past few years. It used to be that perhaps language was a big concern with people. But now apparently, yeah, the sexual violence is a big thing. And they've listened to the teenagers and they've said, listen, if something, as you said, does show a rape scene, that's not going to be possible at 12A certificate.
And that's part as a direct result of the Me Too campaign or not necessarily?
It's hard to say because a lot of the films that they were surveying people on are ones that have had complaints or feedback, as they like to call it, over the past 5 years. So that predates the Me Too movement. But this consultation started in January 2018, so it does seem interesting, the timing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think people have become much more aware of these things and much more aware of perhaps the insidious influence of films and TV that can happen, you know, when this kind of violence is depicted, perhaps in an irresponsible way.
It's not just sexual violence that's being looked at, is it?
All kinds of violence, and they consult on everything, whether it's physical violence. What they did find is things like Bourne and Bond, when it's a fantasy violence issue, people, especially young people, seem more able to handle that and to handle it and process it. But when it seems to mirror something that they feel could be a real life episode that they could imagine being involved with, naturally, it feels more stressful to them.
It feels more stressful to them. So let's get it straight then. Teenagers don't want to see stuff on telly, in films that are on telly, or in cinemas. They don't want to see stuff that could possibly happen to them. Fuckery. Terrorism too. We can't have terrorism in fiction. Suicide. It's all out. Kay Burley with a good question here. Go on, Kay.
And I believe terrorism is also being looked at, and that is because we have changed our view of terrorism, because presumably we're feeling more anxious about it.
Exactly, and that's another thing, you know, anxiety levels have soared with young people generally, and that is one thing that they see on the news and they hear about, and of course...
Anxiety has soared in young people generally, and this is the sort of thing they see in the news, and it makes them anxious, and we have to be very careful about putting it in films, and when it goes in films, those films should be 21s or over 25s, so that we can't possibly see it by accident, because... God, what the fuck would we do?
Of course, if they feel like it's something that could affect them, it's bound to cause them to, you know, be more concerned about it.
So more concerned.
Suicide, again, is something else that's being...
We can't have suicide.
...looked at.
Absolutely. I mean, they're always very careful to warn about suicide scenes because it can obviously be a massive trigger to people. But yeah, that's something that people are asked about.
Okay.
Always.
So tell us how this works at the moment. The board of Film Plus, they all sit down and watch it together? It's a group of men in their 50s with grey suits? Or
it's a group of men in their 50s with grey suits, huh? Fuck off, Kay. Of course it is.
Suits, or how does that work?
Well, they have many, many people who sit down and watch every movie that has to go in cinemas. So as you can imagine, that's a lot of viewing. And there'll be people who've been doing it for a very long time and really understand the nuances of it. And it's very much about context. So that's something that keeps coming up. You know, you could say in isolation, one, you know, scene could be offensive and not in context of another film. So they take into account all the kind of things that might potentially be triggers or offensive to different age groups. But obviously, as we've seen, they need to regularly consult with the public because because attitudes shift and they change depending on what else is going on in the world and how children are changing.
And children are changing. So from now on, there'll be, I suppose, the training given to film censors. Well, those who review films and decide on the classification, their training will inevitably, obviously, change. And change and change and change according to what teenagers are concerned about seeing, lest it give them nightmares. It's all a good laugh when I do this programme, when you and I have a bit of a giggle. But it's deadly serious though, isn't it? Where we're going. The homogenisation, the sterilisation of the world. The death of the arts. The death of free speech. And open debate through the creation of ever increasing amounts of vulnerable groups that must be protected from everything. Madness. But sure, there you go. That's it for Thursday. Thank you. Hope you enjoyed at least some of that, because there was some serious stuff in there as well, huh? Detectives destroying evidence in child abuse cases on trial. And we're told the motivation was that they were just lazy. Some serious stuff in there today as well. The programme will be on Podomatic real soon, meaning in turn it will then upload automatically to iTunes and to Spotify. It'll be on YouTube a little earlier, hopefully, than normal because of the earlier finish, the slightly earlier finish today. You'll give me that. I'll be back with you live on Sunday morning at the usual time of 11 o'clock. Had thought about going a bit later on Sunday, but for the moment, it'll be 11 o'clock Sunday morning with Sunday View, where I'll look through the Sunday newspapers in your company and we'll discuss the bigger stories inside the newspapers as well. Thanks to my guests this week. Thanks to you for listening to the programme, for thinking it's worth listening to. Thank you. And thanks for the support as well. I don't ask for it very often. In fact, I haven't this year. But if you haven't donated to the programme before, go to richieallen.co.uk. There are bank account details and PayPal details there, please. There is no other source of funding except for you. And if you appreciate the programme, and if you can do it, only if you can, do make a regular contribution. No matter how small you might think it is, it'll help me, believe you me. That's it then. Thank you. Thanks to Coca Bell, by the way. I'm going to play your song next week. I haven't forgotten about it. I've just got to download it and clean it up. I don't have to clean it up a little bit, but I've got to get the audio. I've got to get it into my system and get it all squared away. I've got a song from Coca Bell to play next week, which I like. And I'm a man of my word, so I'll do that next week on the programme. Going to finish with the Four Tops. The Four Tops closes out your Richie Allen Show. Have a fantastic weekend. Until Sunday, look after yourselves and one another. It's bye from me. Bye now.